Eier du din egen bedrift? Da betalingsløsningen fra SumUp det du har drømt om. Hold styr på alt fra ordrer, betalinger og kvitteringer, til refusjoner, salgstall og produktkataloger. SumUp gir deg kontroll på alt på ett og samme sted. Kjøp SumUp og selvkjøp.
En podcast fra Podplay.
The energy is there, you know. And it's it's there's this great community feeling when, like you said, you get like parents with their kids and even grandparents and grandparents with their kids, with their grandkids, and it creates a just this incredible sense that it's an event, you know, it's a cultural monument, I suppose you could say.
Yes, på plass I Liège, parkert kjæra. Skal inn på en plass som heter Om, der Mayhem skal spille konsert I kveld, og da har jeg fått lov til å ta en prat med Attila, vokalisten først, og det gleder jeg meg til. Skal bare finne plassen først nå. App, sånn gikk det jo slettes ikke, og det har du kanskje skjønt nå. Han breiale nordtrønderen som du hører her på vei inn på backstagen til Mayhem, fikk jo plutselig beskjed om at Attila, vokalisten, var litt småsjuk, så jeg ble tilbydd en prat med gitarrist Ghoul, eller Charles Hedger, som han egentlig heter, I stedet, og da var det bare å snu seg rundt, og det ble helt nydelig, han jo fra Storbritannia, så kos deg med Ghoul I Gammal Maiden. Charles Hedger, also known as Ghoul, welcome to my podcast and welcome to Radio Rock.
Yep, thank you for having me.
Yeah, you turned around quite quick here because your singer Attila is suddenly a little bit sick. But how are you doing right now?
Good. I'm hoping it's something like a food thing rather than a viral thing, because then everyone's going to get it, of course. But yeah, no, I'm fine. Everyone's kind of okay. We're still early in the tour, so I think yeah, this is day number 4, and so far so good. So yeah, all good.
And congratulations with a really good album. What do you think yourself about the last album?
Yeah, it's like a kind of exploration, a bit like we did with the last album with Demon. It was kind of an exploration of the idea of demons, not just, you know, religious demons, but personal demons and just the concept. And this album is like that, but with the idea of death. And the album itself is a lot more, I would say it's a lot more of an atmospheric experience. Demon was more on the parts, on the riffs, you know, and this one is far more about the, yeah, it's more of a kind of journey through a slight, like through a space, you know.
How much from this album do you play on your set list on this tour?
We have 3, sometimes 4 songs from the set list. The fourth one, we're not quite there yet. To do it live, it's extremely tricky. We can play it, obviously, but it's we're not happy with it yet, so we don't want to do anything until we are 100% that we can play with conviction, because otherwise it's not fair really for the fans. It's a bit, we don't want to represent the stuff weekly. So yeah, we have 3 songs that we've so far managed to get into the set list, which is, you know, it's tricky with a band like Mayhem, because of course there's such a catalogue and we have to try to do stuff from all the eras, and every time we put out a new album it gets harder and harder to find the set list space to get stuff into it.
Yeah. So is it possible to describe the process of creating a new Mayhem album, because I guess the band has a lot of history. You have been through a lot of small changes here and there. So how was the process this time?
Yeah, I mean, now we've been stable for a good long while. It's pushing towards 15 years, I think, now that we've been as we are. And so, of course, that helps when it comes to trying to create. And every album we'd work slightly differently. So this one, normally it starts off with just ideas that we have, and then we bring together and we, you know, share ideas, and people will say, yeah, I like this, or like, or you know, this doesn't work, or that's assuming people ever reply to any of the emails. But yeah, we that's how we generally start, and then once we get a bit of a flow with that and get a feel, then we'll gradually build them towards sort of full structures, and then we'll come together and try to see how it's working, and then people will start to have more input, and you know, and then we just build from there. And this album was very much like that. It was very just lots and lots and lots of trying stuff out and moving things around and just playing, you know, and trying to make it flow, I suppose, because it's quite a tricky album in that sense, because like I said, it's more of a sort of atmosphere thing, and it's really easy to get just completely lost in the woods and no longer have any sort of overview, you know, with something like this. So yeah, it was a lot of work, it was a lot of time.
And how is it to work with people that's been in this band for over 40 years? And I guess there are a lot of ideas coming, and people, are there any arguing through a process like this?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's just arguing all the time, whether about music, about whatever. It's just constant. But that's part of the dynamic, you know. That's part of how it works. And that's part of the energy of, especially with the stage show as well, you know, there's always this kind of, because it's strong, it's five very strong personality people. So of course it's going to have, there's going to be a degree of tension. But that's, I think that's important for art anyway. I think it would be very weak if everyone was, well, it's part of what makes what it is. What it is the personalities behind it, you know. So it's, yeah, it can be a little on the edge sometimes, but it's all in good spirit.
I like to explore what influenced my guests to become musicians, play rock music, metal music. So I always start with this Maiden question, because that was my first wow moment as a kid. So can you remember the first time you heard Iron Maiden?
Yeah, because it would have been my brother was a huge fan, so that would have been just through the wall, you know, through the bedroom wall. So yeah, I'm not sure I can say I remember the first time, because it was just kind of always there. In fact, I don't really remember it not being around, actually.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in England, most of my life in Essex. The first 10 years-ish was up in a place called Northampton. But Essex, basically.
Mm-hmm. And did you have a community with more rock fans and metal fans when you were a kid around you?
Well, not really. I did as I got to, let's say, my mid to late teens. Then I met some other people that were, because this is like the mid to late 90s, and the metal scene at that time was right in that transition point where everyone was saying it's dead, you know, it's over, because it was just before the new metal thing came in. And now, I was never a huge new metal fan, but what I will say is that scene kind of saved heavy music, I believe, in the sense of keeping it alive in the, not so much the mainstream, but just keeping it alive in popular cultural memory, you know. But yeah, when I was younger and I was getting into all this stuff, I mean, I didn't really care, you know. I wasn't one of these people that was looking for a home or a group or something like that, you know. I just liked the music a lot, and it just pulled me in. I was drawn to it immediately when I really started to listen, and then yeah, no one else liked it. You know, I mean, I was into really extreme stuff as well, so nobody liked it. You know, I was completely alone for a few years with that. But then I met some other people that were into it, which was, I have to admit, that was quite cool. You know, to because then I could actually have a conversation about these things with people, share what I thought was so amazing about things, and talk about the musicians, and you know, so yeah, well, that was nice. But nowadays, I think people have it generally. Of course, it depends where you live, but there seems to be pockets of scene basically everywhere in the world, you know. And also because of the internet, you know, you can talk to people a lot easier about stuff. But for me, it was a very isolated experience for the early stages, at least.
A lot of people sent letters and cassettes by mail. Did you do that stuff?
No, I never did any of that. I was, like I said, I was very much, I was just in my own little world with it, really. But, no, I mean, of course, then once I got to know these other people, then we were exchanging tapes and all the time bootlegging stuff for each other. And you know, then it was really cool, because then I started to find all kinds of other bands I'd never heard of, and, you know, and share stuff, and then, and even sit down with a guitar with other people and play and stuff. So yeah, but no, I never did the tape trading thing. That was a little bit before my time.
Can you remember a moment, an album, a band, a song, or something that gave you some kind of rock metal shock that made you want to play music yourself?
Yeah, would realistically have been probably the EP that was the split with Emperor and Enslaved, because it was like... So I grew up very mixed with all kinds of different things that I was influenced by, but I always did, and always and still do, absolutely obsessed with the music of John Williams, all of his film scores, and that was kind of like why I got into music and why I loved music. It just, I mean, it's a lifelong obsession. But when I heard that sound that they were doing, and that happened more with the first two Emperor albums as well, I started to hear, of course it's a completely different sound and a different kind of music, but there was something in it that gave me the same feeling. It was like it was more than just music. It was a feeling, and it was like a picture, you know. Anytime there was a storm, like spring summer storms, then I would always stick on that EP, because it just seemed to go, it seemed to fit with this, you know, lightning. And it was, I don't know, it's kind of funny looking back on it now, but yeah, that was the thing where I suddenly started to think, wait, I could do this, maybe, you know. Or I mean, I didn't think I was going to do it for my life, but I can just do it because I want to do it. Like, it'd be cool to do this.
Okay. So how did you get there? Emperor, Enslaved, that's not the first album that you that you buy maybe with your first money. What did you listen to before getting to the more extreme?
Well, that is the funny thing, actually. It was? Yeah, well, I didn't buy it. So what happened was, my brother moved out and he left behind a box of tapes. Just like, it had a couple of Death albums. It had that split EP. A Motorhead, it had Master of Puppets, it had, what else did it have in there? I think Power Slave and maybe Killers and a few others. And so actually that it really, and I did it all backwards, because I started with the extreme stuff. Because, like I said, it crossed over somehow into... And at first, I was a little bit, you know, I couldn't get my head quite around the vocals and the extremity of it. But there was something in there that spoke to me. There was something in the mood of it, and the feeling, and this sort of epic... there's just this atmosphere. There was, I don't know, just like the soul of the music. And so I was in that... long before, and then I started to move backwards towards like Metallica, Motorhead, and the bands you're supposed to. So I did it completely backwards, totally reversed.
So where is Maiden in this mix? Do you yeah, do you like Maiden today?
I do, actually. It took me a long time. See, I always really loved... In fact, it's funny, it's a bit of a poser thing, but I actually... Because when I had the bedroom after my brother, like when he moved out, I moved into his. And I left up... He had a bunch of Maiden posters and I just left them up because I just thought they looked so fucking cool. Their artwork was so cool. There was the Somewhere in Time, there was a poster of that, and I forget which others were there. But no, I just thought it was awesome. And I liked a couple of songs, but I don't know what it was. I don't know why. I think it was because I wasn't surrounded by people that were... When I started to move into that kind of sound more, that was when I'd made all these other friends and stuff. And so it just they didn't feature that much for some reason. But then a little while later, then I got hold... I was like, you know what? I need to get this because everyone seems to like this band and... I must be missing something, you know? So then I got told of Power Slave, and that album still I absolutely love. In fact, I haven't listened to it for a while, and this interview has made me think that I need to revisit it because I listened to that just on repeat for like 2 months, I think. I just had it on my whatever it was I was using at the time, and I would just walk whenever I was going anywhere. I'd just have it on my headphones all the time. And that's the one that really stuck out to me. I don't know why. I don't know what it was specifically about that album that I really like. It's one of those albums where like every song is just there's no downturn on the album. It's just the whole thing is just brilliant from start to finish.
And if you have to choose one song from the whole Maiden discography, what would that be?
It probably would actually be Aces High because I learned it at some point for some covers band that I don't think ever actually materialized. There's something so extremely cool about how the music perfectly represents the subject matter somehow. If you know, it feels exactly like what the song is about. You get that in the music. It's got this kind of... It's just like a perfect song. It's one of those things. And I always think it's really important because of the background in loving film music, it really matters to me that the music somehow represents the topic in some way. There's this feeling to me that music should always describe something, and I just think that song is a perfect example of that being done absolutely perfectly.
Yeah, it's quite easy to imagine a Spitfire
just the way the riffs sort of roll and the way that it just feels like, and it's dramatic and it's got this kind of excitement to it, like a dogfight. It's brilliant. It's a brilliant song.
So I always remember the getting in a band for the first time. It's like this really nice period in my life. What kind of band did you start, the first one?
It was the typical thing where you just get together with people and just start playing some songs that you like. You know, you'd be at like parties or house parties or something. You'd just start trying to jam, you know, like a Metallica song or something like that. And then gradually you'd eventually get to a rehearsal space. And then we started to do our own stuff. But it was never really going. There was no real solid direction to it. We played a few shows. And I think I did it with a couple of different bands. But there was just like a massive, because the problem is in those days, as I said, there wasn't an enormous scene. And so everyone in there was sort of skating around being in the metal scene, but with just massively different ideas. You know, you have one person that was mega into the Deftones, and then you have me who's like into Emperor, and you have, and so it was really hard to try to pull together something that everyone kind of agreed was cool or was good. But I was always doing stuff. I was always starting projects. I was always just writing stuff at home or just trying to put something together. So it never went anywhere at that point. It was just very chaotic. But the thing about that time period is, what I didn't know is that all of that sort of frustration, what I was really doing was just honing the knife. Like I was getting the skills just sharpening, and because I didn't know, of course, that I was going to have the opportunity to test those skills. But luckily, when I did get the opportunity, I'd had all that background of training for it.
Emperor Enslaved has been mentioned, but what about Mayhem through your youth, and how did you discover them?
Yeah, they're, of course they were. I had one of my best friends actually was a massive, enormous fan, and so he would always have it on. He gave me a copy of the Wolf Slayer EP. I think that's still my favorite release from the band. I think it's amazing. I love that. And so it was there, you know, it was always hovering around, and it was always on compilations and that kind of stuff. So of course it's impossible to be in that scene without them featuring, you know, somewhere along the way.
And how did you get to play in Mayhem after a while being a fan, I guess?
Well, yeah, it was so what happened was, first I got a phone call just after Christmas. I forget what year it was, and it was basically saying, "Can you fill in on bass for Cradle of Filth?" I'm like, "What the f-? Okay, that's a bit of a sudden jump from where I am." So of course I said yes, but with absolutely no clue. It was just one of these things that you absolutely can't say no, you know, in that scenario. I mean, you can say no, but you definitely, it's very rare the universe blatantly just goes in front of you and just says, bang, this is your opportunity to do something now. But in that case, that was very clear that was what it was. So I did that, and then things moved around, and then I ended up playing guitar for them for, because I'm not a bass player, you know. And so I played with them for about 6 years. And in that time, of course, I started to meet other bands, and I met Hellhammer, and because he's a good friend of Sarah, you know, Sarah's Jezebel diva that sings for Cradle. So I met Hellhammer and I met Attila, and we had actually started to talk a little bit, because it was in that period where Mayhem was having some troubles getting the lineup solid. It was right when Blasphemer was leaving. And so there was this whole period of a few years where the band was really struggling to lock back down into something that worked. And so then, again, shortly after a Christmas, I don't know what it is about that specific time of year, but it's been very good to me. I got an email from Attila just sort of out of the blue, just saying, "Hey, how's it going?" So I figured, okay, something's up, because it's one of those emails where a question's coming next. So I replied and everything, and then he said, "Do you want to come over and just rehearse with us maybe in April and just see how it goes?" And that was that, basically.
Yeah, I talked to Danny Filth about Maiden. I think he was quite a big fan of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, most people are, you know, that's the thing. Attila definitely is. He'd have plenty to say about it, I'm sure. But yeah, you know, it's one of these bands that's just sort of, it's such an iconic placement in the whole of heavy music. You know, it wouldn't exist in anything like the format it does without them. So,
but Jørn, I had also had Jørn in the studio in Oslo, and he didn't like Maiden. The bass sound, he said, was no, that's not his cup of tea.
No, I mean, it's quite far from me, but of course he's probably one of the best bass players in the history of rock. So it's definitely he has a very specific way of doing things. I love the playing. I think it's fantastic. It's such a bassist bass playing, if you know what I mean. There's two different ways of playing bass. There's that kind of guitarist that's not quite good enough to play guitar style, and then you've got the real bass players who are real, that's their thing, that's, you know, they have that. And yeah, he's definitely one of those.
So, growing up, for me, it was really difficult to get cassettes or CDs. After a while, I was quite poor, and so I had a few. So, how did you find music? And in your childhood?
Yeah, well, like I said, I was lucky because I had this stack that was sort of left behind, and that was all I had for a while. And then it was just a case of going out and trying to find them. And I was the same. I didn't have any money. So it was really just a case of just constantly on the eye out. Anyone that mentioned, oh, yeah, I have this album. I was like, can I copy it? Can I borrow it? And just, you know, high speed dub it. And yeah, and that was pretty much it. It was then it was all about just everyone was just kind of like, you'd heard, once I got into that friend group, one person would get an album. And then everyone would just borrow it and copy it, and yeah, we just did it like that. And I know, you know, it's nowadays it's music is just so free for everyone. It's so easy. You don't have to buy anything if you don't want to. But as you know, in those days, you really had to go make an effort to go out and try. You know, if you wanted an album, but you didn't have the money for it, it wasn't that simple. You know, you had to go. And then of course, you know, you'd support the bands, because if you got the album and you liked it, then you would definitely try and get a t-shirt for a band that you liked, because you wanted everyone to know that you liked that band, and you would try to go to see them and stuff. So, you know, they lose the money on the record sale, but the compounding effect of that is that you end up supporting them down the line. And I think that's just the way it's always been, really.
Did you have the opportunity to see concerts with Norwegian black metal bands or bigger things like the Metallica, Maiden, and that stuff?
Yeah, not. I think I've only seen Metallica when we've played with them. I've never actually been to see a show. But let me think about this. I've seen. So I didn't. Again, I had almost no money. I did go to, I saw Sabbath at a big festival once, and at the same time, lots of people were there. Pantera was there, Fear Factory, so that was cool. That was the big one for me that was about 17, I think, and that was just mind blowing because suddenly I saw all of these bands. You know, that I was like, "Whoa, this is, too, you know, it's amazing." And I was at the Imperial Live Ceremony in London, this famous Emperor show from 1999, I believe. 98 or 99? Oh, well, anyway, then. The one that they filmed is a very famous live show now. So I was actually there. So that was one of the big ones for me. That was a really big deal because I just loved that band so much. And the show was fantastic. And, yeah, and then it was just bits and pieces, you know. Every now and then I managed to see Enslaved once. I saw... God, who else did I see in those days? I think it was mainly the big festivals. Because that was like that was the sort of most cost efficient way of seeing bands, because then I would just make sure there was a lineup where I could see a few bands that I wanted to see. Yeah.
So you have never seen the Spitfire and heard Aces High on a concert from me?
No, unfortunately not. Let me think about this, because we did play with them one year, and I don't remember when that was.
And then we were supported with the.
It was a festival. It was a big festival. I genuinely don't remember which one it was, but something was going on. There was some reason why I wasn't there when they played. I don't remember what it was, and I sort of regret it actually, because it would have been quite cool. I'm pretty sure Hellhammer was there to see it, but I don't remember. It was a long time ago. But that's the only opportunity that this is another thing, when you're in a band and you do lots of festivals and you play with lots of people and stuff, you always have this feeling, it's okay, we'll do it again, so I'll do it next time, you know. And so, yeah, and of course we haven't played, for some reason, I don't think we've done another show with them since then, so.
And now you will play Belgium and then go further. How is the people, or the, what's it called, audience in Belgium compared to other places? I've lived here for 2 years now, and different kinds of audiences, of course, but how do the black metal audience behave in Belgium?
It's pretty consistent. I mean, it's... Of course, the society-wise, it's quite different from the French side to the Flemish side. But the audience is pretty good for us basically wherever we go, you know, and we always seem to be welcome here. We play here. We've done this, what's the festival, Alcatraz, is that what it's called? Yeah, we've done that a fair few times. Every time it's great, and every time they treat us really well. They're super nice people that run it, and we always have a really good time. The shows have been always good, and the audience has always been good, and yeah, it's like the Netherlands as well, and Germany. It's like just very musical countries. It's just people that really enjoy music and really are passionate to go out and support the bands and be there and, you know, in the room with you, and that is the that's the point. I mean, that's what keeps us going, and that's why we do it. So yeah, it's I think it's always good. Of course, I jinxed it now by saying that. I'm looking forward to it, and it's a good country for us, definitely.
Mm-hmm. I went to Alcatraz this summer, and they had like it was like being in a movie or something. It was like a Mad Max kind of. Do they always do that?
I think that festival is growing year on year, actually, and rightly so, because, like I said, I'm very impressed with them as an organisation. There's a thing with festivals, and it's a feeling when you're an artist, and the bigger the festival gets, the less you get this feeling, and that feeling is just this warm feeling like you're really wanted there. And of course, the bigger the and I understand it, it's not a malicious thing, it's just that the bigger a festival gets, the harder it is for them to personally cater to every act that they have. I mean, you know, you have these enormous festivals like Wacken and Hellfest, and they've got hundreds of bands, you know. But Alcatraz, and there's this one in Poland called Mystic, I think. Those are growing because they just treat the I think, because part of the reason, at least, is because they treat the bands well. Everyone feels welcome, and that means you want to do them, you know, and people want to come back. And that's definitely the feeling I've had with Alcatraz. Like I said, I think we've done it 3 times now, and it's always been good. Always been good. So I assume it's getting bigger and bigger, so probably that's why it's getting more these cool themes and, you know.
Yeah, they had the burning cars and yeah, that was quite awesome. You like movies like that? I guess we people that like metal music, we also like science fiction and stuff.
Yeah, there's definitely a crossover. I don't know why that is, but you're right. I suppose it's because metal music is a little bit more, it's a bit more storytelling. You know, it's a little bit more escapist, I suppose. Less about the real world and more about ideas and concepts. So it does make sense that people into this kind of music would also be therefore into the kind of films that have the same, you know, ideas and on concepts. So, yeah, there's definitely a crossover. And, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, I grew up Star Wars and Indiana Jones and basically anything that John Williams put music to, you know, I was definitely into. Also loved the Alien stuff and Predator, of course. So yeah, absolutely. It's yeah.
Gratulerer med 16-årsdagen, jenta mi. Litt av en sommer da du ble født. Vi malte jo huset med Butinox Futura 16. Det jo 16-års garanti på den husmalingen. Mamma og jeg veldig fornøyde med den malingen.
Hallo.
Og deg, så klart. Du jo så god i
Bruk Butinox Futura 16 neste gang du skal male. Med 16-års garanti på farge og glans.
Sommersalget på god lyd i gang hos Soundgarden. Nå får du knalltilbud på kvalitet I en rekke prisklasser. Enten du ønsker deg nye trådløse høyttalere, utehøyttalere, radio, hodetelefoner, eller hva med en skikkelig hjemmekinopakke til fotball-VM. Sommersalget finner du I butikk og på soundgarden.no. Velkommen til Soundgarden. Bare god lyd.
You're listening to a podcast. I'm Bruce Dickinson. You're not. And you're listening to Gamal Maiden.
Funny you should mention John Williams, because my 7-year-old son started humming on Imperial March today. Yeah.
and then I put it on, and of course Spotify made a list with, and he's been making so many movies and really good ones. Do you have a favorite from John Williams?
I mean, my favorite score is The Empire Strikes Back by far. I think it's an absolute masterpiece. It's like a perfect film score. The thing with his music is, especially in those days, you almost don't need dialogue. You know, you could just have it on a silent film and the music tells you basically everything that's happening in the story. You barely need the anyone to speak. But Empire Strikes Back is by far my favorite score of his.
So let's wrap it up. What are your plans? Have you played Norway yet, or is that in the future?
That will be Inferno in whenever it is, April. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So we last time we were in Norway would have been, I think it was 2 years ago. I don't think we played there since then. That was this double show that we did. And so now, yeah, we do Inferno, which is going to be real chaos for Hellhammer and myself, because Covenant is also playing. So we play with them. And then the next band is Mayhem. So we have to basically be on stage about 3 hours in total. And also we'll have to do double rehearsal days as well leading up to it. So it's going to be kind of brutal. But... yeah, that's always cool to do Norway. So there's always a good audience for us there, so obviously.
I don't think many would in the 90s believe that this band would exist like 30, 40 years later. What is it with Mayhem that makes it keep going?
I think that there's a number of factors. I mean, it nearly didn't exist by now. You know, it was definitely on the downward slide a couple of times, you know. But the last sort of decade plus, it's just been going up all the time. And I think there's a number of reasons for it. One thing is the legacy. We have a ton of new generation fans coming through, you know. That helps, of course, a lot. You can't survive as a band if you're not replacing your fan base all the time. And I think that we do a really good job these days. I think that it gets better and better. We play well together more and more as the years go by. I think that we are... I just think the quality of everything has moved up. But in doing that, we are still very conscious of not losing ourselves and becoming some sort of corporate Disneyfied version of the band. We're still the same people. We still have the same goals. I mean, of course, I can't speak for the goals that they had in like the 80s and 90s, but what I mean is the mentality and the ethic behind the band is the same. We're never interested in trying to be something acceptable or something packageable and saleable. You know, that's never our intention. Everything that we do is 100% authentic and with meaning and with a genuine desire to express or create. And so I think that's got a lot to do with it, because I think that fans, they're not stupid. I mean, they can smell in authenticity. They know if you mean it or you don't. And I think that enough people understand that we really, you know, we mean it. We're genuine, and we're here because we want to be here. It's not for a paycheck. It's for, you know, to do the thing that we're doing. And I think that has a lot to do with it. And I think that's why we hold on to fans and why we gain new fans. You know,
you see grandfathers with grandkids in the audience.
Yeah, it's starting to happen for sure. Yeah, it does happen. Yeah, and that's really cool. I mean, it's the average age of our fan of our audience has dropped significantly in the last, say, 5 to 10 years. It's really, like I said, it's just many more generations coming through, and now it's like just a lot of young people are at the shows. And that's really good for the shows, because the energy is there, you know. And it's there's this great community feeling when, like you said, you get like parents with their kids and even grandparents and grandparents with their kids, with their grandkids, and it creates a just this incredible sense that it's an event, you know, it's a cultural monument, I suppose you could say.
This was a question for Attila that I guess wrote most of the lyrics for the last album, but it's a lot of death there. That's the theme of the album. So what do you think happens when we die?
I think we're going to find out. I mean, that's the thing. Everybody's going to find out. And I don't have any clear vision of it, other than I try to be quite rational and quite logical when I think about this stuff, and it's kind of impossible because logic doesn't really apply when you're talking about something so incredibly vague and outside of our understanding. But I think if I was to just to sit down and kind of rationally think, is this everything? No, I can't arrive at that. I can't arrive at that logically. There's just too many gaping question marks in existence and reality and everything. So I don't know what happens, but I think something happens.
Thank you so much for doing this in short notice, and good luck tonight and with the rest of your tour.
No, I mean thank you. It's been a fun chat actually, and yeah, thanks very much. Like I said, early days so far, but it's going good. So, touch wood, yeah. it keeps going good, and yeah, thanks for having me.
Gammal Maiden med Torkel Torsvik, en podcast fra Radio Rock.
Men det gikk jo bra da. Charles Hedger, ghoul i Mayhem, gitarist som hadde fine barndomsminner, synes jeg. Jo, litt sånn hæsblæsende når man må snu seg rundt I siste liten, kast notatblokka og bare la tjattra gå på dårlig trønderengelsk, men nei, jeg synes det ble fint det. Og stor, fin backstage på en plass som heter Serang, tror jeg vi kan kalle det på dårlig trønderfransk. Litt sør for Liège, og hvis du I området der, så vil jeg anbefale å stekke inn om den plassen, litt sånn gammelt industriområde, for da jeg var ferdig med intervjuet sette meg I kjæra for å kjøre derifra på en litt sånn kald, blaut, belgisk vinter ettermiddag søndag det her, da tårnet det seg opp en bygning framfor meg som vi hadde jo akkurat snakket om Mad Max, det var en slags blanding mellom Thunderdome og Mordor. Det altså et gammelt stålverk som står der, sikkert som har laget kanoner under 2. verdenskrig, som de har latt stå da, for at vi generasjonene etter skal få se hva de har holdt på med der, og for et beist av en bygning, masse rør, og jeg kunne bare se for meg all flammene og rennende stål nede I grøfta rundt omkring der med arbeidere som døde som flua, ikke sant, med helt syke arbeidsforhold. Så jeg oppsøkte den plassen hvis du glad I sånne rare bygninger og se hva vi mennesker har holdt på med opp gjennom tida. Det ble en helt rå søndagsettermiddag I litt sør for Liège I Belgia, så det får bli mitt reisetips. Og så hør mer på Mayhem, her skal vi få et bittelite utdrag fra siste albumet som handler om død. Liturgy of Death, siste Mayhem-albumet. Og så høres vi på mandagen, ny spennende gjester, det kan jeg love. I Gammal Maiden, tusen takk for at du har hørt på.
har hørt en podcast fra Podplay. En enklere måte å høre podcast på. Last ned appen Podplay, eller se podplay.no.
Eier du din egen bedrift? Da betalingsløsningen fra SumUp det du har drømt om. Hold styr på alt fra ordrer, betalinger og kvitteringer, til refusjoner, salgstall og produktkataloger. SumUp gir deg kontroll på alt på ett og samme sted. Kjøp SumUp og selvkjøp.